right now you're feeling a bit like Alice, tumbling down the rabbit hole? This is your last chance. After this, there is no turning back. You take the blue pill. The story ends. You wake up in your bed and believe whatever you want to believe. You take the red pill. You stay in Wonderland. And I show you how deep the rabbit hole goes.
Deeper Down the Rabbit Hole. Now live, Tuesdays, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Para-X Radio Network.
Hello and welcome to Deeper Down the Rabbit Hole. This is your host, Jason M. Caldwell, joined tonight by Stephanie Connolly Reisner. Stephanie, how are you doing?
Pretty good. How are you doing?
Oh, better now. Folks, this week's show is coming to you recorded because we were not able to make it onto the network live tonight. And fortunately, both Curtis Joseph and Stephanie have been very, very kind to me. And we have worked together to make sure that we get this recording done tonight so that we can make the podcast happen this week. Let me tell you something. When magicians get together and start playing with technology, bad things do happen. We have proof. We all have examples of bad things happening. But in all due reality, I think the latest Windows update broke my audio device, and I'm going to do some major renovation on my drivers this next week. Now, I want to remind you folks of something. I want to give Andrea Venomous a quick plug and say you need to go to AndreaVenomous.com/shapeshift. Check out his shapeshifting course because it is only going to be available in this iteration until about December 5th, I believe. So it's your last chance to get in before it goes to version 2. So he's going to have it down after December 5th. If you want a chance to get in, go check it out now. Also check out DoMagic.com for the latest DoMagic challenge. That's DoMagic with a K. Stephanie, you got any announcements you'd like to add this week?
Yes, actually, I will be at Mile High Con this coming weekend, October 27th and 28th, signing 13 covens and sitting on some panels. So if anyone's local.
And especially if you have a chance to go see Stephanie on a live panel, do it. She is smart, and she knows her stuff, and she proves it all the time.
So, did you want to introduce our guest tonight, or?
Well, you know what? Without further ado, actually, do you have his bio up still? Because my system got wrecked.
Yes, I have him up. I didn't know, though. Did you have any other announcements? Didn't have anything else to announce.
Well, that's all we're going to announce this week due to our technical difficulties. And I apologize that we weren't a bit more organized. And actually, while I am rambling on, I'm going to go ahead and bring up, I thought, I may have to edit this later. Without further ado, I want to introduce everyone to Curtis Joseph, who is a self-proclaimed black magician. He's with the Becoming a Living God group. He specializes in dark alchemy through the teachings of the most ancient gods and goddesses of humanity. He is greatly influenced by schools of Eastern thought, which he enjoys teaching to others to be able to apply in practical ways. Now, this man grew up in a secular home, and he was looking for answers at a young age to spiritual questions that he had. The spiritual doctrines of various warrior traditions began to offer some insight while also raising even more questions. In his early years, he felt Christianity would offer the missing pieces to the puzzle, so he sought to become a pastor by gaining an education at a Bible institution. However, through his research of the Abrahamic faiths, he saw a much more sinister agenda behind those religions. At that point, he perceived no other option but to turn to the very gods which were demonized by the modern church. The demons of modern religion became his allies on the quest for truth, and he vowed to become a voice for the gods of old. So welcome to the show, Curtis. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing wonderful, Jason.
I want to thank you again for sticking with us and doing a late night recording for this week's podcast, sir.
Oh, yeah, it's not a problem, brother. I definitely have been there, and I can relate. So I definitely have no reason to be impatient regarding situations like this, you know.
So is black magic of Ahriman? It is Ahriman, right? Am I saying that right?
Yes, black magic of Ahriman. There's Ahriman. Different ways to pronounce it, but yeah.
So is this your first personal publication?
Yes, it is my first personal publication. This book actually took about 6 years, 5 to 6 years of path working to complete.
Oh, wow. So I need to dig in for my audience. I need to get into this background because you have a background similar to my. Well, actually, no, because I was raised in a Christian home. Now, you weren't actually raised in an active church going family, correct?
Correct.
But you took an interest in it. Now, at what point did you take an interest in Christianity? Because I want to paint a picture for the folks of you got into Christianity and how this evolved into what you've become.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, at a young age, my mother put me into various martial arts schools, and it was pretty much to instill a sense of self-discipline. And I really loved the martial arts, but what I found interesting was the spiritual backbone that was behind all of them. And I would apply those principles to my life in order to try and enrich the life experience. But I grew up in Youngstown, Ohio, which is really not a great area. And I ended up leaving home at a very young age. I guess I'll just say that. And, you know, it really got to the point to where I was thinking, you know, maybe this Christian thing might be the answer. So I went for it. And I spent about 2 years in a Bible institution. And there we pretty much breathed and ate and crapped the Bible. I mean, this was a place where secular material was just strictly forbidden. So yeah, it was definitely an interesting experience. But what I found was that, you know, I ran into other sources of religious texts, like the Nag Hammadi Library and various Gnostic Gospels. And the church looked down on this hardcore. Like, they literally said I was an agent of apostasy. You know, and that's when I said, okay, go big or go home. What's the agenda here? And I started tracing some of the more modern demons back. And it took a lot of years of research, but I found that they could all be traced back to the ancient gods of the Vedas and Hinduism, and the very first religion of duality, good and evil, was Zarathustrianism, what most people would call Zoroastrianism today.
Yes. Uh-huh.
So, yeah, that paints that picture.
So I bet when you were looking at Zoroastrianism, you started to see how there's a lot of parallels between that and the way modern Christianity has kind of formed this battle between good and evil, and Satan is kind of an arch demigod of evil, and strange parallels there.
Oh, yeah. Well, what I found is that Zarathustrianism or Zoroastrianism is actually the nucleus of all modern religious cages. I mean, we're not just talking about Abrahamic faiths, but it also influences how yogic traditions and Buddhism are taught today in modern times.
Ah.
And I started to actually see that it was more of a political agenda and less of a spiritual movement.
Right. So I have a question. When you were in seminary, was it more of like a, say, an evangelical Baptist type seminary or Catholic seminary?
Yeah, it was evangelical. It was Assemblies of God.
Okay. Okay. Because, you know, sometimes that like makes a little bit of a difference, because I don't know about you guys' experiences, but when I talk to Catholic priests, for example, they're very Gnostic in the way they look at things.
Oh, yes.
And it's very, very interesting. Like what their parishioners believe is oftentimes like not really what they believe.
Right. Right.
So.
Yeah, I can agree. There's a lot of, there's actually a lot of powerful magic within the Catholic system. You know, it's
yes.
Just, you just have to have an open eye to see it.
Right. Oh, there's sigils all over their churches, you know, and most people just don't even realize it's there. So.
Right. Yeah, I agree.
Completely. Well, interesting.
I'll put it to you this way. I'm thinking of having a Catholic priest friend come on the show later on next year to talk about the Black Mass. He's actually done a lot of research on that.
Oh, nice. Oh, how interesting. That should be an interesting show to listen to. I'll be tuning in for that.
Father Jason Spadafore, he's been on the show before, and he's looking to come back, so I'm going to make an interesting show for all of you.
Yes, absolutely.
So I'm sorry, back on topic. So I want to hear 6 years in the making on this book, so yes. Let's get into this voyage of the black magic of Ahriman.
Mm-hmm. Well, at this point in time, the book started when I was working under various magical lodges. And at the time, I was working under Asenath Mason, who was also a Become a Living God author. And her work, it really did take me to the next level. But it pretty much catapulted that in conjunction with my own spiritual maturation process. I mean, I believe there was an element of synergy there. But it allowed me to become very much aware of spiritual forces that were surrounding me. And I also worked with Michael W. Ford a lot, and I was in the middle of working out of one of his grimoires, and one of the divs, or demons, of Persia confronted me directly. And I had a very, very hard time dealing with these questions that I was being plagued with. These questions of duality, because I essentially started to feel that the God of the Bible, as well as Satan, were two sides of the same coin. And, I had worked so hard as a black magician to get beyond the whole God thing. I mean, I was a hardcore mm-hmm. black magician, you know, but this was 6 years ago. This current has really helped me to mature. But, you know, through all of that was the beginning of my initiation into this current, which essentially deals with what I see as the true divine source being the unlimited potential of the void. I refuse to call it God because of the bad associations as well as the good associations that are stuck within the confines of these religious cages, you know? Mm-hmm. But it's just the what I consider to be the cosmic womb. It's unlimited potential. And this also falls in line with science when we are looking at dark matter. A lot of Kabbalists might call it Yasad, but this potential is what I have learned that the magician actually molds and shapes to create change upon reality. And it has no name, it has no face, it has no agenda. It just simply is.
Yes, I absolutely agree with that. Into Monolith Tree is very similar. We call it the source of all that is basically it, and it simply is. And I say that about demons often, and people will look at me like, what? And it's like, well, they're not malevolent, they're not good, they're not evil, they simply are. And that really throws a lot of people off when you say stuff like that.
Yeah, it does.
So,
it does. Absolutely. Yeah, but don't people like easy answers, you know?
They do, and they like having things in their neat little black and white boxes too. They don't like thinking everything's a shade of gray because that's too uncertain for them, I think.
Yes, yes. Yeah, they do.
Absolutely.
You know, and this is what people really don't want to understand, is that there can be something else beyond their worldview. And, you know, from what I've seen, demons, though they are external forces which hold great power, they also flow through everything, including us. So they are also aspects of our own human potential.
Yes.
Which has been shut down by a political and religious agenda. And I mean, if we look at the potential of the brain power that we use today, you know, what, 10, 13%, that's no coincidence. Why is all of that potential there yet not tapped into?
Right.
There's an oppressive force there, and it's a political one as well as a spiritual one. These two things go hand in hand.
Well, I agree with that. I mean, haven't they done studies where, you know, different sects of monks, they've tested their brains like during meditation and everything, and they see like parts of the brain that normal humans don't use, like just light up.
Absolutely.
Yes.
So,
and you will notice that oftentimes will not happen when you are at church and, you know, just going to church once a week. The spiritual, I believe, spiritual practice, it should be fun and enriching, but at the same time, it has to be a discipline.
Yes.
You know, you
can't. Well, and I find it hard to believe that people can actually grow. I mean, you can't actually do exercises like, say, for example, the ones in your book in a group setting, really, because there's too much distraction.
Yeah.
Because getting together in a group is about socializing. It's not about growing spiritually.
Right. Yeah. And that's what you have nowadays. It's a social club. That's what religion is. And I'm not saying that there's anything wrong with it either. You know, I am for people going to church and doing their own thing. If I wasn't, I would be exactly what I don't want to say despise or hate, but what I dislike. And that is, you know, taking the person's choice away from them. I'm not an intolerant person. I am a black magician, because that's a term that people use. But I prefer the term sorcerer, and I seek harmony, not dissension. That's what will create peace in the lives of the world. If we were all more tolerant and we sought harmony instead of dissension, it would just be a completely different place. And it seems like these religious doctrines truly do have a common underlying theme. However, this common theme is division.
Right. Well, that's interesting, because, go ahead. Someone else was going to say something.
Well, it's okay. I was just going to say, so as a black magician, you are not a person who seeks to do evil. Yet, you use the term evil very early on in your book. So I want you to explain your use of evil in evil speech, evil thought, evil deed, and the three evil principles. And explain yourself on that note.
Okay, well, you have to remember that according to lore, the divs, the demons of this current, are beings of backward understanding. Now, when you look at the word evil, backward, what does it spell?
Yeah, live.
Right. So the three evil principles of Zohak, which is the son of Ahriman, the first Kunda, or man turned devil, these three heads of the dragon, Zohak or Azi Dahaka, represent evil thought, evil word, and evil deed. This, first and foremost, is a means to practically manifest the results of your sorcery. Because a lot of people, for instance, will open up books on Wicca, they'll do a candle spell, and they expect it to work, thinking that that's it. That's all there is to it. And Hollywood helps to feed this facade as well. But evil thought would essentially be aligning your thoughts towards the sorcerer's objective so that it can be achieved. However, evil thought on a broader scale is simply being able to think for yourself and see beyond the information that is given so that you are actually educating yourself instead of assimilating facts. Evil word, at face value, would be essentially utilizing words within your relationships and within your life to sway reality more towards your will. And this is something that you really don't see all the time. People do not use their language productively to create harmony. They're always gossiping. This is a waste of energy. They're always talking about meaningless things like who won the Super Bowl. And, you know, these things are great. These things are great, but we have to get beyond that and learn to use the vibrations of our words to mold our reality, because they do. And this is why the ancient languages are so powerful. And then evil deed is not, you know, committing crimes against humanity. It's not, you know, murdering anybody. It deals more with acting outside of the box to manifest your will. I mean, I get people all the time, I really want to read your book, I just can't afford it. Can you send me a PDF? And I'm like, well, look, I have children I have to feed, right? But let me give you some advice. Show some initiative. Collect cans for a couple months. You said you're good at reading tarot. Why don't you do that? Charge $10 a reading. You know what I mean? Get beyond the slave system and strive for what you want. And not just for my book. I mean, geez, this is, I'm not trying to sell a book here. I'm trying to sell nothing. I'm trying to really get humanity on the same page in regard to their personal power. So that sums it up in regard to the three evil principles. The three evil principles get humanity beyond mere existence and into a mode of living and becoming something greater.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm going to be good this week because I want to say so many things about people asking for free stuff, but yeah. I'm going to shut up.
Yeah, I think we all could go there.
Yeah.
We just won't. But no, but that actually brings me to one of my questions is, you know, you do get students so often who just want to read, but they don't actually want to do.
Yeah.
And you advocate in your book in the very beginning, which I found rather refreshing, 'cause a lot of magical books do not do this. You advocate that people actually, that the adept needs to actually jump into practice and get the experience.
Yeah.
And have you found, because I was going through your book, I was like looking at it and going, you know, this is like some pretty dense path work. And it could literally take someone years to work through it if they were actually working it, actually working it.
Yeah.
So my question is, do you find that a lot of people just read it and don't work through it? Do they start and then quit? Do they?
Yes. There's a little bit of all three. More often than not, it is people that read it and don't apply it. And then there's also a larger majority who just simply can't stick with it. But then there are also those who do apply it. And I mean, don't get me wrong, there are people who read the text and it does change their perspective and their worldview. And but
right.
And they understand it intellectually, But you can see, because of that over intellectualization of the material, that they haven't jumped in to do it, because they cannot speak of the power that they experience, the manifestations that occur, the knocking on the walls, and also the initiatory experiences that go along with this work, because this is not just a book which is designed to build the life that you want. No, this is about personal evolution, and that creates resistance. Resistance that you have to look at. I have this saying that comes from this path working specifically, to where humanity essentially has to look at oppression as opportunity. And, you know, the deeper aspects of the work, they begin to spill out of the pores of these people. I mean, those that truly work it, I have one student of mine that actually got off of heroin. Another one is just doing so well with the work that I can't do anything but feel proud of him. You know, and the people that have watched me produce the work that have went through the experimental process could also attest to the fact that these forces make themselves objectively known really fast when you just jump in and you just do it.
Right. Well, that's good, because I like how you kind of go through and you actually explain the foundation of your system very well. And so people know exactly why they're doing what they're doing. And that looks, I mean, that's obviously very important. And of course, this is going to lead me to a question that I'm sure you're probably expecting. There's evocation, there's invocation, and then there's envocation. Yeah. And right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So invocation, would you like to kind of tell the listeners out there kind of what you see as the difference between those three things, or those three particular methods?
Yeah, sure. well, yeah, let me start there. The definition of evocation is to essentially summon a spiritual force to stand before you for the sake of communication. I always use this practice to gain knowledge and wisdom. I never was the type to order spirits around and get them to do things for me, because I think that stifles my own potential. I might ask demons to teach me how to do magic for myself, but this would be, for instance, one use of evocation. Invocation is to summon a spirit within the self, to allow it intimate communion with the physical self, to the point where it's going to leave this residual energy that is going to empower the life experience. This is not as extreme as possession. Possession is a whole nother thing, in my eyes, anyway.
Okay.
And invocation, to put it in simple terms, is reverse possession. And the reason this occurred is because I always loved the practice of invoking spiritual forces. But according to lore, these spirits already exist within the self, first and foremost.
Mm-hmm.
So there was no sense in trying to invoke them, because they're already there. Through the alchemical process, we do awaken them within. But invocation is essentially a way to step in to the spiritual flesh of these, what modern black magicians call demonic forces, for the sake of looking at reality through their eyes. And it actually occurred accidentally through the path working when I was utilizing a scrying bowl with water in it. And I saw that, you know, I can use this as a gateway to move into specific astral realms. And since I can't invoke these things and bring them inward because they're already there, maybe I should do this backwards. So I conjured up Akomana, the div of evil mind. And when I began to see the smoky overlays and I knew his presence was there, I just simply put my consciousness through that astral gateway. And yeah, the experience was definitely powerful. And what occurred was that for about 3 or 4 days afterward, my whole perspective on everything had shifted. It's like there's this residual energy that starts to affect your own human finite mind for the sake of expanding consciousness. And it can be overwhelming. But it's like the physical shell upgrades in order to essentially adapt to this current.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, okay. That's definitely something that I brought forth. But, you know, I haven't read this, but I hear that Franz Barden suggested it somewhere. I never
really
read it. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Oh, you should. You should. Trust me.
Franz Barden is excellent. What's interesting is like you, okay. So like a lot of times when magicians like have arguments, it's because of terminology, because we don't all use the same terminology. I've noticed. Right. Have you noticed this? Yes, yeah. Definitely. It's actually very common because for example, like for a demonolator, invocation is a respectful calling of, but evocation is either to call something from within yourself. Because you evoke an emotion or you evoke, but an evocation is often considered disrespectful. Mm-hmm. And that's just, I think it's just, at this point, we're kind of just mincing semantics, but very similar. But invocation is actually, I think it's practice in certain schools of occult thought. I just don't know that they call it that, but it's very similar because there's a comedic ritual that I had to do during my seminary training, that where you basically become as Ta, the creator, and you actually, and it's not really so much a drawing the demon from within you, it's more drawing the demon out of you. You become as the creator. So instead of spending all this time trying to stare into the eyes of your God, you are looking through the eyes of your God, because technically you are that God, and all the demonic divine is part of everything. It's part of us. It's part of everything out there. So demonolatry has some of these same tenets too. We just don't have. So it's really interesting to see that. And I've seen it also in the comedic, and I've also, and in some ways there's some shamanism in there too, which I found some very interesting shamanic techniques. And so I love how I love it when you kind of look at rituals and you can see just kind of how they all, you can see like similarities from tradition to tradition, you know what I'm saying? So from your material that's rather old, and all the way up through some of the more, comedic was probably a little later period, you know, and then you kind of move through. So it's very interesting to me to see those similarities, but then how it somehow, it's different terminology. So I find that fascinating.
Oh, yeah.
And from what I see from my ceremonial background, there's the whole idea of, as you put it, to evoke is to call something to you. To invoke is to put on the God form, or sometimes all the way up to potentially possession. But then you're parallel to invoking, and the parallel I see to Franz Barden is this idea not a lot of ceremonialists get of actually going, putting your consciousness to another plane. I do have a little bit of research on Franz Barden, and his idea of evocation was actually to go out on the astral plane, go to the place that the spirit resides in, and bring said spirit back with you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Right, so, and in the monastery, we call that ascension. So you see what I'm saying?
See?
It's interesting, because it's the terminology. It's very weird.
Yeah.
Okay, and, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, the terminology definitely does. We should all be spending time learning from each other instead of spending so much time pushing each other away. Because, you know, it's definitely, when you look at the life experience now, it's really like the embodiment of the Demiurge tale of the Tower of Babel, where God separates humanity in, you know, different languages, different terminology, different social structures, and this causes the division between the people. And we keep feeding this, but we're not getting back to the fact that, hey, we built this tower and we can get to the heavens together.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yes, I agree.
We're losing that. And this is why the evolutionary process of mankind, I believe it's been shut down. Because if we could do that, this would just be simply a different world. It would just be so much different. But the differences in terminology is... it's definitely interesting, because Black Magic of Aramon, as it is published, is something that has actually evolved quite a bit since publication. Like, I used to use the term ascent, and I'm pretty sure I used it within the text a lot. But now I use the word expansion.
Ah.
It is not...
I like that.
It's not the ascension that I am seeking of consciousness, right? I'm not simply seeking to raise consciousness. I'm seeking to expand consciousness.
Ah,
and
I like that.
This, you know, this terminology can definitely cause some separation. But like us now, sitting here talking about it, we can come to a mutual understanding of these various terms. And this is what the occult, it's one integer within occult exploration, is looking at the wisdom that is behind the symbolism of it all.
Right.
You know? Because when it gets down to the brass tacks, it's useful for everybody at the end of the day.
Yes. So I mean, and that of course goes kind of leads into the power of words. You talk about the power of words a lot.
Yes.
In the beginning of the text, when you're building the foundation for this particular system.
Mm-hmm.
And I noticed that the Egyptians had that too, where the word was sacred. So even the written word held as much power as the spoken word.
Oh, yeah.
So it's very interesting to see that parallel there, because you stress the importance of the power of words.
Yes, yes. And, you know, the reason for that, it really falls in line with science in a way, because word is sound, and we know that sound is actually not noise, it is vibration, that the ear essentially translates into something specific that we can perceive. But, you know, everything is vibration. Even the Bible states, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was God, and the Word was with God. And so we look at this, and it's so interesting, because when you know that everything is vibrating and moving, and for instance, this desk that I'm sitting at now, when you get down to the molecular level, these individual molecules are very far apart. It would be like the difference between probably me and you, or you and I.
Mm-hmm.
And so how come when I put my hand on this table, it does not separate and move and distort the seemingly dense structure of this desk? It doesn't make sense to most people. But this vibration is what creates change, because the change is the sound. Reality is sound. So if you do not carefully utilize your words And even in ritual, when we're stressing words of power, you can definitely stifle the results, or sometimes manifest things that you don't want to manifest. Because what I have learned through Sovar, which is Shiva, actually, is that the word will vibrate according to your spiritual vibration. So in other words, if I'm angry, the words I speak are naturally going to reflect angry intentions. So when you learn when you learn to focus on the word, it becomes a mirror to actually reflect upon yourself. This is inner standing. So you can gain better emotional and mental control. And ritual is the perfect place to do that, because through ritual, you are trying to wipe the slate clean to paint the picture that you want to see. You know, you want to work with an empty canvas. So you want to be calm yet powerful, and it's a fine line to walk. But yeah, the word is very potent. In the English language today, it really doesn't have much power compared to, let's say, Latin or even German or, you know, Hebrew. The Kemetic languages were very powerful.
Mm-hmm.
English pales in comparison.
I agree with that. Now, how important do you think it is for, like, people to actually understand the language they're using?
Well, I honestly feel like it isn't as important as practicing the words of power. I believe they have atavistic value. In other words, this is why I used Pallavi within the text. And of course it is inverted, but that goes into a bit more depth. But this is the Stone Age period. This is right at the end of the Ice Age that this religious doctrine began. So atavistically, within the mind, this language holds a lot of subconscious value. Now, when you hook into the energy of reciting these things, these litanies, these gathas and these hymns, you know, a lot of times you aren't consciously aware of anything anyway. It takes you into a state of trance to where you are not really reading it, but you're simply using it as a template to sonically externalize your intention. You know.
So, and then the question is, so theoretically, the sorcerer would need to memorize all of them, because would it draw away from the intention if you're just reading it out of the book?
I don't believe so, no, because I haven't I haven't memorized them all. The key is to not get so much into the conscious recitation and reading of it. See, here's what happens. Let me explain a little better. By trying to read these, what you're actually doing is short-circuiting and overwhelming the conscious mind, which brings the subconscious forth.
Okay.
If that makes sense.
Okay, because I would just see, like, maybe somebody, you know, actually, like, reading from the book and focusing so much on trying to pronounce it right or read it that they wouldn't be able to enter that state of consciousness they would need to actually affect change. Because that's, like, one of the things I have with, like, a lot of these books that are, like, supposedly meditations, but they have, like, these long liturgical passages in them, or I don't know if they're necessarily liturgical, but you know what I'm saying, like passages that are like invocations, and then you stop and you do one thing, and then you read another long invocation, and then you stop and do another thing, and then you read another long invocation, and you're so caught up in reading invocations and doing this action or that action that are you really actually moving into a different state of consciousness, or are you just going through the motions at that point?
I think through the process of learning, it definitely is a matter of, well, simply that, learning. I mean, for instance, it's not necessarily the correct pronunciation of the word. See, let's say, for instance, within the supplemental text, called Prayers of Erizira, there is something called the Prayer of the Shadow of Mars. And this is something that the Zarathustrians use to protect themselves from the negative aspects of Martian energy.
Mm-hmm.
Now, my Martian intent in the moment might be baneful magic. It might be wrath. Let's just use this as an example, hypothetically. So
okay.
I'm essentially going to start to raise those emotions. I'm going to try to hold this inner vision. And through the process of reciting this prayer, what is occurring is the recitation doesn't become a word. It's not a word. It's not something you can read. You are actually unreading it. The word simply starts to come out as an expression of your intent, that inner vision,
mm-hmm.
that inner vision, which you are externalizing. And that is what literally starts to mold the very fabric of reality, which is, well, it's dark matter, it's, you know.
Right.
Now, I want the audience to hang on to this recording and listen to his explanation again, because he's doing a very good job explaining something that I have struggled for years to try to put into words.
Okay.
I believe it's a learned skill. I believe it comes with practice. It's hard to explain. I think you're doing a really good job explaining it. It's just the whole idea. There's a difference between simply reciting and inciting with deep energetic intention.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Definitely. And I absolutely agree with that. I am just curious, because I mean I see so many people and they perform these rituals, but it's almost like it's almost like a bad high school play. There's like no intention. There's no feeling behind it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, and I think it's good to discuss this and explain this. So for, you know, maybe okay. someone listening who's just starting out, kind of understands that it goes beyond that.
Okay. Can I go a little bit? Can I go a little bit deeper?
Oh,
yes,
please.
Absolutely.
Okay. Let's take the science of semantics, for instance. Semantics is essentially the effect that sound has on, let's say, water. There was a Japanese professor that I mentioned within the book. I forget his name off the top of my head, but there's mm-hmm. a lot of people nowadays in the scientific community that will actually utilize the frequency of sound, the frequency of words, and it will create these geometric patterns with sand, with water, and various other substances. Now,
right.
we know that that's what matter truly is. It is a geometric, when we're looking at sacred geometry, we see with our own eyes how sound will literally give structure to something. Now, the Japanese professor, the Japanese doctor, went into how intent alone can change the molecular structure of water. Okay, so think about how much water the human body contains.
Right.
Don't you think that by reciting these kinds of hymns or what the Persians call the gathas. Don't you think? I mean, let's face it, water is everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
It's in everything. There's some moisture all over the place, but it is definitely in the air as vapor, whether we perceive it or not. It's in the
yes.
It's humidity. So water is also known as a spiritual gateway.
Well, and we're how much percentage of water? Our bodies are made up of how much water?
Oh, well, I think it's 78%, something around there.
Yeah, something like that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so, you know, when you understand how these intentions, okay, we know that intention alone can change the molecular structure of water. Now, when you take that intention and express it through sound, let's not even use the word sentence. Let's not use
mm-hmm.
let's not use word or paragraph. Just through sound, you are literally changing the fabric of reality. So you know, that's something that's very deep to think about. And so when we're always cussing, F this, F that, mother, nah, what do you think we're doing? Not just to ourselves, but to everybody right. else around us.
Mm-hmm. You know? That's true. That's true. I mean, there is a warning that goes with that when you're minding the power of your words, that mm-hmm. you do have to consider the effects that actually has. Excuse me. Or any words said in anger, even, because that vibration. I actually did some vibrational experiments years ago when I would go visit my grandmother in the nursing home. Mm-hmm. And I would pause and do like a 15-minute meditation out in the parking lot. And I would either think angry thoughts, sad thoughts, or happy thoughts. And then I would go in and see how some of these older people, some of them with Alzheimer's and everything, were affected by me. And if I would go in there angry, you would see people kind of like draw themselves away.
Right.
But if I went in happy, I actually had people who would reach out to me. So, I mean, I've done quite a few experiments with vibration in that sense, to change the vibration of my mind through either reciting, you know, certain words or thoughts, and just kind of, you know, changing my, I don't know, my presence, I suppose, is one way of putting it. And it does really affect things. So, yeah, I mean, if you're running around cussing, obviously, or yelling at people, right. yeah, that definitely does affect them. And you also have to wonder what it's doing, like you said, to yourself, because we are made up of so much water, obviously, our bodies are. We could actually be killing ourselves.
Oh, yeah. And, I mean, let's face it, water is an awesome conductor of energy. So... Mm-hmm. You know, when the aura is what? It's electromagnetic energy. This is electricity. Mm-hmm. So when you start shifting the makeup of the human body, which is, you know, around 70-80% water, that mm-hmm. electromagnetic energy that's going to be radiating off of you is definitely going to be different than if you were in a more peaceful and serene state of mind. But like mm-hmm.
right.
you were talking about this bad high school play, and I definitely agree with that. And this is mm-hmm. why, like, for instance, the Litany of the Black Sun within Black Magic of Ahriman is a very long hymn, which was mm-hmm. an inverse prayer to Ahura Mazda. But that pretty much just sets the stage. It starts to allow the... presence within the room to align with the current in a very effective way. And it does that by essentially, as I said, you know, aligning things, meshing things in a way that is more conducive to bringing forth these powers. Because the Black Sun, Ahriman, is the nucleus of all of these divs. So when you bring mm-hmm. that totality, when you align your atmosphere with that totality, it's very easy to then... after the recitation of this hymn, do something in a way that is much more alive and more effectively influenced by these powers. So it's not so much like a bad high school play. It's just a part of the discipline in this case, you know?
Right.
Does that make sense?
Right. So, yeah, well, with practice, yeah, I'm sure it wouldn't, it would actually have a bit more oomph to it, but... Right. Yeah. I mean, because a lot of people don't realize when you're like reading an invocation or you're saying words or whatever, you're some sort of summoning or conjuration or whatever it is that you're reading. Words are not, they are sounds, but they're not just sounds. There is emotion behind them. There is feeling behind them. There's a whole vibe behind them that kind of goes beyond just communicating or conveying what you want. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
And, so, like, if you're doing some sort of evocation or invocation, you're saying, you know, come forth from the great abyss, yada, yada, yada. Uh-huh. You really should actually be feeling on drawing that force to you while you're saying those words.
Oh, yeah.
For it to be the most effective. You know what I'm saying?
Well, see, this is why I think people need to utilize words. This is why grimoires are translated as what? Grammar. But we need to see grammar as a template of inspiration. You know what I mean? For instance, when you have a complex conjuration or invocation, which just about all grimoires do, besides a few authors that really do break things down to the brass tacks, people need to learn that, okay, when they're looking at this, like we were talking earlier, how it should pretty much be liturgy. It should not, because when you are reading it, you are capitalizing on the conscious mind. If you are reading it, you truly do want to use ritual as a point of inspiration. You want to allow your inspiration to create these things. You know what I'm saying? And you can do it when you really hook into a current. You can get beyond that. You can get beyond that. Once you're starting to become surrounded with these spiritual forces, they will move through you and the words will come out. And it will be much more powerful than the words of an author on a piece of paper. And then I'm going to say that about my book as well. There's alchemical principles within my book that would be dangerous to go outside of. But in regard to, specific words being used and things of that nature, if you can tap into these ancient forces using the English language, go ahead. But for me, it was just a matter of systematic immersion and really getting things to be more culturally refined and focused. Because, I've done this chaos magician thing that a lot of guys do nowadays, mixing Set with Lucifer and Lilith with Hecate, and it's just not for me.
Sure.
I have to remain focused.
Right.
So, let's see. The people that give chaos magic a bad name. Yeah. I'm just going to say I'm very proud to take on the moniker of chaos magician simply because, to me, true chaos magic is the kind of exchange we're having now when we're discussing what is working behind the frameworks of each individual system.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I agree. And there's nothing against chaos magicians, but I just know it doesn't work for me as an individual.
Right. Oh, sure. And I understand. I wouldn't. Yeah, that kind of right. I'm right there with you.
I actually do know, of course, I dwell in the chaos magician, whatever current there, but I know a lot of people who do mix pantheons, do a lot of pantheon mixing. Mm-hmm. I've done it myself a few times, but there are certain things you learn as you go. I generally do not mix Egyptian deities with, say, ancient Semitic. It just doesn't really work.
Right.
I totally get that. But for some people that doesn't work. They really do need to focus, and that's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Go ahead. Finish your thought.
Well, my thought was at the beginning of this work, the spirits kind of made the focus very important. For instance, there's a lot of stuff that are associated with Zoroaster, like the oracles or the Chaldean oracles. And that has nothing to do with Zoroaster. You know what I mean? So I got it as a supplemental text to read and check out, and I'm finding Hecate in here, Helios, and I'm like, okay, this definitely would not be a good source to use to bring forth something which is authentically focused on these specific dark forces. But go ahead, Jason.
Well, I want to broach, because you brought it up early in our conversation. Let's talk about when magic gets real, when you're really immersing yourself into the system, and you brought up the whole idea of people were doing these path workings and there's knocking on the walls, or maybe they see a shadow dart by, or let's talk about what kind of stuff are people experiencing these path workings, and what kind of advice do you give to them not to let the spooky stuff distract them from the work.
Well, first of all, the spooky stuff is what I sought out at the start, because it was a means to face my own fears. There was nothing I wanted more than to stare the devil in the face. But, you know, as you mature, you start to understand that it's not like the devil physically stands there in your living room and shakes hands with you and asks for your soul. That's not how things operate. But the thing that we need to understand is that ritual essentially is putting the conscious mind on the back burner and allowing the reptilian mind or the subconscious mind to come to the forefront. As a result, a lot of scary things can occur, but this is really truthfully a part of learning the language of the subconscious mind. And the language of the subconscious mind is the same language, it's the language of ritual. And so we have to understand that though these things might affect our reality externally, according to our perception, are they really there? Because I'm always skeptical. I remember a long time ago, I was living in a family-owned house alone. And I found this huge glass table, and I said, sweet, this would be an awesome black mirror. So I took this huge glass table, and I made a black mirror out of it, and I conjured Tiamat, the goddess of the primordial abyss, the goddess of the salt waters of Babylon and Sumeria. And when I did this, this huge... I mean, I saw this with my physical eyes. This huge black cloud came out of that mirror at lightning speed and just entered me. And I felt this cold wind. And I was like, holy crap. What just happened? And, you know, what I did with that experience was I simply accepted it. And I said, you know what? I am facing my fears through this. And by that alone, I am growing, because fear is an illusion. We have nothing to fear. If we believe in ourselves as eternal beings, spiritual beings having a physical experience, there is nothing to fear. All fears are based on pretty much one, the fear of death, the fear of harm. I mean, it's really the fear of the integrity of the physical shell or the physical life of others. But it's all an illusion, you know. So that's really my advice to people, is to understand that these fears, once embraced, actually become doorways to your greatest power and potential. And the reason we are fearing the practice of conjuring these ancient forces is because we are programmed to do so. So in an indirect way, through practices such as the Path of Smoke and you know, other sorcerous currents, like the Demonolator current and things of this nature, we're communicating with our greatest potentials and powers. These aren't things to fear. They're things to embrace.
Now, a little bit of real talk. Let me just say that not everyone has the stamina to walk through those gates. Because I'm going to say that I've had serious conversations over the years with people who, you know, beg me, get out of the occult, get away from magic, stop doing what you're doing. And when you start digging into why, I've had several conversations over the years with people who walked the path, had a tangible experience, something akin and comparable to what you're to, you know, what you chose to embrace and move through. It scared the crap out of them. Yeah. They burned all their books and they went right back to the Christian church and said, I want to have nothing to do with that.
Yes, I agree. I had a guy when I was living in Texas. I had yet to publish anything. I had yet to even really start writing anything. But I had a guy who was part of the coven that I was ordained in, the Coven of the Primal Dawn in Amarillo, Texas. And I rented this little room that was built on the side of a garage. It used to be an old mage quarters, and we'd go in there and do rituals. Well, we were doing something very specific and not conjuring anything directly. We were just simply working magic out of a specific text. And this huge bat-like shadow just started diving at him. And I saw it. I saw that he saw it. We both saw the same things with our own eyes. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what occurred. He ducked and he ran out of that little maid's quarters and bolted and never came back. I've tried to contact him recently. and last I heard, that's exactly what he did. He went to the church, man. You know, started praying. And that's okay. You know, you might not have the stamina, but that's the thing. Everybody loves the novelty of magic until it works.
Yep. Right.
And then you understand that human beings shouldn't have this kind of power. And that's when you really start to understand, well, maybe I'm not a human being. Maybe I am an emanation of the true divine, which is beyond mm-hmm. all of these religions. And so maybe I should act like that instead of acting like a primitive human being.
You know? Or to even give the inverse of what you just said, maybe that's when you wake up and actually become human as opposed to an automaton.
Right, right. And that's what I find interesting, is because everyone wants to become a living god, right? But they don't know how to become effective human beings. There's no compassion.
Right.
You know, and that's really... I mean, let's face it, that's really the whole goal, is to become an effective human being, to be able to fulfill your potential.
Yes, absolutely.
To allow the divine self to express itself through this flesh. That's the goal.
So it seems to me, Curtis, that I think we've been going for at least an hour now. Don't want to keep you up all night. I want you to tell the audience what kind of – do you have any appearances, any on-site events you're going to do here in the near future?
Actually, right now I am working on a tutorial course for Become a Living God, which is going to go over something I used to work with in the past, which I call the Path of Revelation. And it deals with what I call the evil trinity of – evocation, invocation, and envocation outside of the context of the Path of Smoke. And it deals with the three beasts of Revelation, as well as biblical demonic forces that are considered forbidden today. In regard to, contacting me, anybody can look me up on Facebook, Curtis Joseph. And they can also go and check me out at templeofblackandfire.com. as well as the Become a Living God Forum. I'm very easy to approach. I'll help anybody as long as they're not going to take advantage of my kindness and exploit it, you know. But I would...
Stop asking for free stuff.
Right, right. It's just, it is that simple.
Because trust me, folks, when you pay the man for his time, when you pay anybody for their time, you're going to get more back from it.
Yes, definitely. Yeah. And you're going to actually appreciate it and get more out of it as well. You know.
Yes.
Well, all right, Jason and Stephanie. I really appreciate the opportunity for being on. It was definitely a great chat.
I appreciate you for sticking it out with us, having a late night talk, and even helping me out with the audio problems that we were having tonight. So... good luck to you in your endeavors. Everybody go check out, I'm going to say it wrong. Is it becomingalivinggod.com or, Curtis, you?
Yeah, you can check us out at becomealivinggod.com. My specific page would be becomealiving.com, Curtis Joseph Aramon.